The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Curtis Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Oh, we got lots of stuff for you. I find it remarkable, the story that Aaron just had, that the Seattle Public Schools are still trying to find a way to clear out a drug-infested homeless camp on school property. This has been going for months and months and months. And in a normal society, in a society where people just reacted to things like this in a reasonable way, that camp would have been gone day one. Because people would have gone up to the camp and said, hey, you can't camp here. This is school property. We don't allow drugs and weapons on school property. But instead, as you just heard, the assistant city mayor, Casey Sixkiller, he says, well, it'll cost $1 million if we're going to provide motels and small homes for everybody in this camp. So they're holding us hostage, apparently, for $1 million. You don't negotiate with terrorists. And then the schools say, this is the part that really gets me. The schools say, well, we might have to pay for removing them out of our homelessness budget. That homelessness budget is not there to put heroin addicts in small homes. The homelessness budget is to help low-income kids get transportation to school, get a free meal, free breakfast, free lunch. The state calls it McKinney-Vento dollars, and it's to take care of low-income kids. I guarantee you this money was not designed to put a heroin addict in a motel room. That's why we're paying property taxes through the roof that go to the schools so the schools can put heroin addicts into motel rooms. But we're not a normal place. We're not a normally thinking, functioning, doing region of the country. In fact, in so many ways, we are the worst in the country. And this is not just me and some hyperbole. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I got an email a couple of days ago from a listener who works down in Olympia. And he was telling me a story that he was walking to get a sub sandwich on his lunch break when all of a sudden a guy came off a bus in Olympia and he was brandishing a knife. And all of a sudden he starts screaming at the listener who contacted me. And the listener described it to me. He had a retaining wall on one side of him. He had the bus shelter on the other side of him. And he had the maniac with the knife in front of him. And so, you know, first question that I'll ask him, because we're going to talk to this guy, the victim, right after 12:30. Why didn't you just turn and run away? But what he said in the email is he's pretty sure that if he had turned and run, this guy was pretty young, didn't look like he was unfit. He was just a maniac with a knife. And so he thought if he turned and ran, the guy was going to chase him and stab him in the back. The guy kept screaming that my listener, who again was just going to get a sandwich, the guy started screaming that he hurt his kids. And so the maniac starts demanding the address, the ID of my listener, saying, now I have to go hurt your kids. And then he takes a swing with the knife at the throat of our listener. And wait till you hear what happens from there. We'll talk to the guy coming up right at the bottom of the hour, and you will hear the experience of just another average working person in our state trying to get to the sub sandwich shop so that they can have a little lunch. And I'll tell you what's particularly scary about it. It's a Subway. I'm not going to play games with what kind of sandwich shop it is. Here's what's particularly scary. My wife and I always wanted our girls to have a healthy appreciation. Believe it or not, as cynical as I am about government, we always wanted our girls to have not only a healthy appreciation, but an insider view of what government is all about. And so all three of our daughters when they were, I think it was about 14 years old. I think you're about a high school freshman. Maybe you could be a sophomore. But all three of our daughters were Senate pages in Olympia. And, you know, it's a typical type of intern job. You do the gopher work for the state senator, but you also get to see what's going on in Olympia, what goes on in the halls of power. And yes, I'm cynical about government, but I still appreciate that our girls should get that kind of insider view if it's available. And I think your kids should do the same thing. But my wife and I would give them lunch money. If they wanted to go, you know, they make friends with other pages from around the state. And guess which subway they would go to? The one where the knife-wielding maniac was. This guy with priors. This guy who had two strikes against him. And he's still out screaming maniacally, waving a knife around at strangers. Well, I guarantee you, my youngest daughter's 26 now. So it was probably 11 years ago when our last daughter was a Senate page. We would not let her leave the campus now to go get lunch, which is a shame. It's a tragedy because part of, you know, as you start to expose your children to life's opportunities, one of them is you're going to meet people from all around the state and you're going to make some friends and you're going to get to go get some lunch on your lunch break with them. No can do anymore. If you're a parent who sends a kid to be a Senate or legislative page, I wouldn't let the kid walk around Olympia. Olympia has become a drug-infested cesspool. And that's a shame because it was an important place in our girls getting an appreciation for the whole legislative process and what it's all about. Okay, we'll talk to the victim of that attempted stabbing coming up right after the news at the bottom of the hour. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
But then we have some statistics that back up what we have been telling you for years now. There are 50 states and the District of Columbia. So there has just been a study of how many police officers we have per capita in all 51 of those districts, 50 states and D.C. What is the number of cops per capita? The state of Washington is number 51. We are now dead last in the number of police officers who are out to protect us, supposedly. And then you look at the stats, and they've compared the numbers year to year. Last year, murders were up 47% to 302 in our state. Fraud offenses up 131%. That's because Nigerian scammers, you know, remember them? The so-called scammers? Oh, we've recovered a few hundred thousand of the 100 billion that they stole. But the Nigerian scammers, they made up the majority of those fraud offenses, just ripping off the taxpayers of this state. DUIs, 22,000. DUIs, the most preventable of crimes. You know how you prevent DUI? Don't drive drunk. And one of my great sponsors right now, Davis Law Group, I know the people, and she is the president of MAD in our state, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And I'm very happy to be voicing PSAs for them right now, just telling people, do not drive drunk. There are so many options out there. You can make plans ahead of time if you know you're going to be drinking. You can call a ride share. You can arrange to be the designated driver if you're out with friends. Or you can make sure you have a DD if you're out with friends. It's an absolutely preventable crime. And I'm very happy that the Dory Monson Show is working with MAD right now to get the message out there. But we have great sponsors who care passionately about this. 22,000 DUIs in our state last year. One crime that's down, drug and narcotic abuse. Why would that be the one? Oh, that's right. We don't charge drug crimes anymore. Which, again, is why murders and all other violent crimes are up. So we'll talk a little bit later with Hannah Scott, who's been breaking down some of these numbers. But imagine that. 51 states and D.C. combined, and we are number 51. When it comes to cops, this is the absolute failure of our politicians who have put the citizens in danger. Grave danger? Is there any other kind? Let me give you some examples. Up next, I'll just continue with this in the big league because they're all related. In Lake City, on the start of a sunny holiday weekend, just after noon, a man was going into his girlfriend's home in Sandpoint, 123rd and Sandpoint Way. Now, I've always thought of that as a lovely neighborhood. But as you know, or as you may or may not know, just a few blocks west of Sandpoint Way is Lake City Way, where there are homeless encampments all over the streets. And the crime has been running rampant there. And this guy went into his girlfriend's backyard, and all of a sudden, somebody opened fire, shot this guy six times. Q13 News talked about what they now believe was just a random shooting.
It was the start of a sunny holiday weekend. Just after noon, this man, Travis, was heading into his girlfriend's secluded home on Sandpoint Way when someone confronted him.
And he was shot six times in my front yard.
His girlfriend, we're calling Jane, who lives where the shooting took place, is asking we keep her identity anonymous. She says she's living in a kind of fear that's unexplainable. She says it appears the shooter was lying in wait, but she doesn't know for whom or why.
All of that definitely goes through your mind, you know, of the safety of the people that you love, that, you know, your children that you are have to protect. It's terrifying.
So she says that the shooter was just lying in wait and that it was a random shooting. Now, we have no way of knowing that it's true, and I certainly have no reason to believe that it's not true, because there are some random shootings, but often you find out later that there is some connection in the between the shooter and the shootee. Jane described a recent encounter that she had with a masked man in her neighborhood.
That's immediately where I went, was this person that tried to break into my home came back.
Jane says just 10 days before the shooting, she and Travis had a horrifying encounter with a masked man wearing gloves dressed all in black at her home.
We were having coffee on the couch. We saw him come up the deck, and he saw Travis and charged at him. And the sliding glass door was closed and locked in barely in time. He continued to pound on the glass until we showed him that we called 911. And it was only then that he jumped off of the deck and ran away.
The other thing that came to my mind as I was hearing all of this is, you may remember a couple of months ago, there was a young woman who was jogging in that neighborhood about five blocks west of Sandpoint Way, about the same place on 125th or so. And she was attacked by a man wearing a mask. She was thrown into the bushes. She fought him off. And as for Jane, she says even before her boyfriend was shot six times, they were living in fear.
I didn't sleep for days. This was during that heat wave. I was too scared to even open my windows to get any kind of draft. So my house was, you know, 100 degrees inside.
Now they're wondering if the shooter's going to come back again.
For me, it's all I think about is just catching this person and wanting to just desperately know what's happening and to know that we're safe and that we're not going to be murdered some other day.
Is this kind of region that our politicians wanted to create? Because they're doing a brilliant job of creating it. And a similar type story is a man and woman who were shot overnight in North Seattle. This was in the 1200 block of North 137th. So this is about 15 blocks away, where two people were shot. And Seattle Police Chief Diaz says, well, they need to address the gun violence problem.
This problem cannot be ignored.
Okay, it's not a gun violence problem, Chief. And if you don't recognize that, you're the wrong man for the job. This is a people violence problem. The guns don't sprout legs and fingers and start dancing down the street like some old Marlboro commercial and then all of a sudden open fire on people. Gun violence problem. We're last. We're last out of 51 in cops per capita. Of course, law-abiding citizens need guns to protect themselves if they want. But for you to call this a gun violence program, it's a people violence program.
This last year and a half, I don't see it slowing down.
Oh, no. No, we don't have any way to stem the tide. Then why are you in the job? And I know you're hamstrung by the pathetic Seattle City Council. And then finally, along the same lines, you have in Capitol Hill, a guy with an axe broke into a house, started chopping away at the door in a house, and Cairo 7 covered this story.
The door was cracked to let some air into the apartment, and he climbed up from the alleyway down there.
Yeah, so the axe suspect, he breaks into this house. They find out that this guy has a bunch of priors, but first, the person in the Capitol Hill house had to have his dog alert him to this guy.
That's when I went back and grabbed my pistol. And at that point, he had seen me, and he started walking down the hallway towards me, and he had started reaching for the axe on his back.
So the homeowner saw a few weapons on the guy.
He was also wearing a glove that had a metal spike sticking out the front of it.
And he says that there was a pistol pointed at him. He was worried. Because after the police came, after they captured this guy, they released him. A guy walking around with an axe, they put back out on the streets. And why? Well, Gary Horker explains from Channel 7 why the axe-swinging criminal was released.
Cairo 7 News obtained Stanley Redd's mental competency evaluation, and it appears to be the reason he was set free without charges. State doctors apparently concluded Redd was incompetent to even understand why he was arrested, saying he has symptoms of psychosis, including rambling speech, thought disorganization, and delusions. The evaluation goes on to say Redd's charge was not a serious offense, according to state law, and the city attorney says he had no choice but to drop the case. Now the victims in this case are wondering about their own well-being and of Red's.
It's unbelievable. So the guy's too crazy to stand trial, so they let the guy with the axe, the criminal with the axe, go back out on the streets. The revolving door of justice. And then people wonder why I say we're attracting the worst heroin and meth addicts from around the country. You can walk around with an axe, and if you act crazy enough, they won't even put you in jail for that. It's unbelievable. But it's our reality. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, we'll continue our theme. I told you at the beginning of the show about the man in Olympia who had a guy with a knife threaten to stab him. What must that be like? And what do you do in a situation like that? We'll hear his firsthand account coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. It has no doubt been the dominant story on our radio show for the last couple of years, and that is the rampant street crime that has completely transformed our region. And the two cities that seem to be handling it the worst are Seattle and Olympia. And yes, in Olympia, because of the drug homelessness crisis there, crime there is out of control as well. listener named Patrick, he reached out to me, and he told me what happened to him as he was just trying to get some lunch the other day, and Patrick joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Patrick, I appreciate you reaching out to me. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Dory. Thanks. So, yeah, it was a terrifying experience. Last Tuesday, I went to up the street to get a sandwich for lunch, and in between meetings all day, and on the way back, a guy stepped out from the bus stop and started accusing me of withholding the bus from him and pulled out a knife and said that he had to stab me.
Wow. What goes through your mind when you're thinking, I'm just on my way to get a tasty sandwich in the middle of a beautiful summer day, and all of a sudden this nightmarish situation just comes out of nowhere? What goes through your mind?
Well, at first I'm thinking, because you hear a lot of things on the street in Olympia, but at first I was kind of thinking, okay, I'm just going to kind of go about my business and keep going, but he stepped out in front of me to keep me from walking. So at that point, my guard was definitely up.
Okay, you kind of described to me how you were boxed in. You had a retaining wall on one side of you, the bus box on the right. This guy was right in front of you. Could you have done a 180 and started running away from him?
And I thought about that, but based on the way he was reacting and how close he was, I had no doubt that if I tried to run, he would have stabbed me.
And what was he saying this whole time? He said that you kept him from getting the bus, but what else was he saying?
He kept going in and out of these fits of rage and calm moments, and as he was doing that, he pulled the knife out because he kept putting the knife in and out of his pocket just constantly, and then he took it out and kind of held it to his opposite side, and then took a backhanded swipe at me, which really freaked me out at that point. But he kept saying a lot of things. I don't know if I was tuning them out because I was so focused on his hands, but he kept saying a lot of different things, and then he put the knife back in his pocket, and it seemed like he started to calm down again. And then he said something about that I had killed his kid, and now he needs to kill mine, and wow, demanded that I give him my ID.
And the other place where it really sounded like a stereotypical nightmare is you told me there was a cop in the deli within eyesight, and you were trying to get the cop's attention, but you just couldn't quite make eye contact with him. Is that right?
Yeah, so the officer started coming out of the other deli that was just maybe 30 feet away, and the attacker kind of positioned himself close and kind of sideways to me with the knife out. While the officer was walking by, the knife was down at his side, and his arm was all tense. And I was afraid that if I called out for the officer that he would have jabbed me, you know, in the stomach or in the side. And but I kept trying to make eye contact with the officer, but just the position to where he walked around the vehicle and got in the vehicle, then I just couldn't get his attention. And I go over it over and over again in my mind, should I have yelled out or not? But I think I probably still did the right thing, because I'm pretty sure he would have stabbed me.
And you also said that after he said he had to kill your kids, he demanded your ID, that he took a swipe at your throat, and you were able to just barely lean out of the way of that one?
Yeah, he almost the same fashion as the first swipe he took. He kind of held his arm across his body and then took a swipe, but this time he kind of extended more, and I had to lean back to keep him from missing my neck.
My goodness. Okay, so you're certain if you'd called out, or you're reasonably certain, that he would have stabbed you in your back or in your side. The officer drove off, and then how did the situation finally resolve itself?
So I had managed to, because every time I tried to get past, I kept trying to kind of sidestep it as I was trying to talk to him and calm him down and trying to get around him. And when I finally got on the other side of him, and then he got distracted by something in the bus stop, and he stepped into the bus stop to start looking at the schedules again or something, and it was an opportunity for me to take several fast casual steps, I guess, to get some distance. And then I got just enough distance to where I felt safe. He started yelling again inside the bus box. But I was far enough to where I was out, and I just kept walking and got back to my office and sat down and took a few breaths and called 911.
And you said that victims' advocates for Olympia Police, that they were very helpful, that the police themselves, when they responded, they were very helpful. So what happened at this guy's court hearing?
So he had a preliminary hearing the next day, so I went on Zoom to watch that, and the prosecutor asked for no bail because evidently this was potentially this guy's third strike. But the judge he cited the Eighth Amendment, and then he set the bail at $250,000. And I thought I heard him say the word excessive. As you're saying that, but I can't recall.
Okay. I assume that this guy, if he was living on the streets, he doesn't have $250,000 or $25,000 bond to get out. Is he still locked up?
He's still in custody, but I don't know his background, because to add to it even more shockingly, he's not someone you would normally expect something like this from. I mean, he's a fairly clean-cut guy. He's wearing clean clothes, clean-shaven. Which made it even more surprising.
But you did tell me that at first he presented well in court, which made you a little fearful that they would think your side of the story was exaggerated, but then the guy just went off while he was in the courtroom as well?
Yeah, after the judge set the $250,000 bail, then the attacker insisted to talk to his public defender, so the judge gave him a couple of minutes to do that privately. And then the public defender came back and announced to the judge, I forget the exact words, but he said, on behalf of my client, I was asked to inform the court that if he doesn't get released, that harm is going to come to his wife. And the judge kind of interceded at that point and said that he's going to keep the bail at $250,000.
Wow.
And at that point, the attacker he stood up and started stomping around because you could see it on video. And then he started yelling, and then they put the cuffs back on him and took him out of there.
Does this make you want to rethink walking to lunch? I mean, do you need to start carrying some pepper spray or a gun or anything like that to protect yourself now, Patrick?
You know, over the years, I used to love going downtown Olympia and going to the shops and the delis and stuff, but I haven't been doing that anymore. I used to, if I had to grab something without leaving, then I would just walk up the street to, you know, grab a sandwich at the place that's close by. But even now, I mean, I know it's only been a week, but I have no intention of going walking around town.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I know your fear is that they'll let this guy loose. This is a potential third strike, so they could lock him up for a long, long time with the deadly weapon enhancement, to be sure. Will you keep me posted? I know that you're worried about how soon they'll kick this guy free, so will you keep me posted as it keeps making its way through the system?
I will. And like you were saying, I'm... this guy is dangerous, and he's going to hurt somebody. If he gets out, looking at a third strike, he's got no consequences. From what I understand, that's life without parole.
Right. Amazing.
And
all right,
that just terrifies me.
Yeah, and should terrify everybody on the streets. Well, Patrick, keep me posted on what happens with this case, and thanks for letting everybody, all my listeners, stay aware of the danger that lurks out there.
All right. Thank you, Dory.
Okay. All right. That's Patrick, who's attacked with a knife down in Olympia, just trying to get himself a sandwich last week. And this is when we encourage kind of homeless drug addicts. Maybe this guy's not. He said he presented well, cleaned up well. But this is what's happening on the streets all too often. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we do have lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. I told you yesterday about a King County Council candidate. Her name is Ubex Gardier. She wants to be your representative on the King County Council. There's only one problem with Ubex Gardier. She went on a school bus 11 years ago and threatened the children with a bomb. But what I did some more research after I told you this story yesterday, because we have the audio now, thanks to thepostmillennial.com. We have audio of what she did with the bomb threat on the school bus. If you weren't listening yesterday, here's the audio of what went down. This is a middle school bus in Seattle, and she told the kids that because she is wearing, looks like traditional Muslim garb that's a little bit baggy, she tells the kids on the bus, again, middle schoolers, she tells them that she might have a bomb or a gun concealed underneath her clothing.
Excuse me?
Sure.
You can drive, you can leave.
Can't leave?
Yeah.
Okay, she's telling the bus driver, you can't drive, you can't leave. He says, I can't leave. I know it's hard to hear, so I'm going to kind of walk you through this.
Why?
Okay, now she starts walking down the aisle of the bus that is filled with kids.
I have a bomb.
Okay, you hear that? She says, I might have a bomb. And you hear one of the kids go, oh, hell no. And now the kids are terrorized by this person. Okay, now some of the kids at this point, they start opening the emergency door on the bus. They start scrambling out, and they're running, they think, for their lives as she calls after them, cowards! Cowards, you're leaving your classmates.
Hey, someone better get here real quick.
It's the bus driver telling dispatch, we need police. Somebody better get here real quick. You're like, cowards. Cowards. Well, and as I played for you yesterday in this exclusive audio that thepostmillennial.com got, she told the officer that arrived that she was prepared to die.
I don't care what you want. I'm going to tell you right now, these are children on the bus, and I'm going to ask you to get off the bus right now. I'm going to ask you once, and then I'm going to take you off the bus. If you choose not to get off the bus, I'm going to drop you right here as we stand. Do you understand that? Okay, then what I would do is back up off this bus right now. Turn around and face away from me. Right? Start backing up. Start backing up. I'm only going to tell you once.
Okay, he's told her many times, but she refused to back up. Some of the kids stayed on the bus and were terrified that they were about to be blown up. Okay, so what's the update to this story? Because as I told you yesterday, Ubex Gardier, she is a candidate for King County Council. Now, is even that far left enough to get the voters of King County to vote for you? I don't know. But here's what I know that affects you. If you ever do commerce in the city of Seattle, she has a job working for the city of Seattle. And she's had that job for many, many years. And right now, she makes $120,000 a year working, it says, in general government for the city of Seattle. $120,000 a year. Now, I would think in most jobs, when you threaten to blow up a school bus full of children, it might be a disqualifier. In Seattle government, it gets you $120,000 a year, and she has endorsements from many members of the state legislature and former Seattle City Councilman Mike O'Brien. They have given Ubax Gardier, the wannabe bus bomber, they have given her rousing endorsements as to why she should be on the King County Council. And of all the craziness I've told you about in our local politics, this may have risen to all-time number one. Go check the news for you. And then Fast 15 is coming up next.